Big cheers and a standing ovation over free tuition. NYU School of Medicine on Thursday told these students it's offering full tuition for all its current and future students in its MD degree program, regardless of need or merit. And it says it's the only top 10 ranked medical school in the U.S. to do so. And to fund the free tuition program, the school says it's raised $450 million of the $600 million needed to offer the free tuition for the long haul. But students will still have to come up with the roughly $30,000 needed for room and board every year.
Australia hit Chinese telecom giant Huawei with a partial sales ban on Thursday. They blocked the company from selling 5G technology for Australia's next-generation mobile network. Authorities cited risks of hacking and foreign interference. The U.S. also recently restricted Huawei and another firm, ZTE, for similar reasons.
QVC and the Home Shopping Network, or HSN, are overhauling their branding and merchandise to tackle the biggest threat to their business, Amazon. QVC and HSN are also pursuing millennials, where they spend most of their time, social media, launching click-to-buy links on Instagram and Facebook live streams to sell fashion items such as earrings, shoes, and jeans.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's August 24th, 5:09 in the morning. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. On another business day getting underway, we made it to Friday, TGIF. Lots going on this morning, at least here on the program. We've got a lot of intel from overnight on numbers from markets around the world. We'll do a couple of headlines here. Paul Nolte is in the house, as he is every Friday, from KingsView Asset Management in Chicago. We'll talk about our portfolios and some economic data that came out this week a little bit later in the program. Brian Summers will be here from skift.com, as he is every Friday. We're going to have a nice conversation with Brian about United Airlines charging a little bit more for seating in economy. Maybe some routes, American Airlines routes, going away from O'Hare to some faraway places. So we'll do all of that today. Brian, by the way, about 5:40 this morning. First on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up about a quarter, 46 points. NASDAQ futures are up about a quarter as well, about 16 points. And the S&P futures are up about 5 points. Around the globe this morning, markets in Europe are generally positive, with the FTSE, the DAX, and the CAC all up about a quarter to a half a percent. And in Asia, markets are generally mixed. The Nikkei is going to end the day down about 190 points, almost a full percent. The Hang Seng off about a half a percent. The Shanghai is up just a fraction. And oil is trading this morning at $68.47 a barrel, which is up about 64 cents. Stocks closed lower on Wall Street yesterday as a slide in banks and energy companies offset solid gains for the technology sector. Home builders also declined yesterday following new data showing sales of new homes falling in July. Federal regulators are saying that U.S. banks set a record, making more than $60 billion profits in the second quarter, up more than a quarter percent from a year earlier. Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, says the profit boost came because banks have been able to charge more interest on loans in recent months, and they received a substantial lift from the tax law. And the Trump administration has laid down some new rules preventing residents in high tax states like California and New York from avoiding a new cap on widely popular state and local tax deductions. The action over the new Republican tax law pits the government against high-tax, heavily Democratic states in an election year showdown. A dozen states, most of them predominantly Democratic, have taken or are considering measures to get around the cap. Let's bring in Paul Nolte this morning from KingsView Asset Management. Paul, good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you. Good morning.
I guess start with a couple of those headlines first. The SALT, I think it's called, acronym for it, SALT, the state and local tax deductions.
Yes.
Illinois tried to do something like this, didn't they?
I'm not sure that they've done that, but certainly we're in that category.
High tax states.
And certainly when you're looking at a lot of the areas for real estate taxes is the big one here in the state of Illinois. And that can be an issue for a lot of homeowners as far as how much they're going to be able to deduct on their taxes. So it is an issue. It's when that first got passed, that was certainly a salvo to a lot of the Democratic states like California and New York, where it becomes a huge part of their federal tax return.
Yesterday, I mentioned some of the numbers on home sales, showing sales of new homes down in July. More weakness in the housing market, considerable weakness there.
Yeah, and it's been for the last 8 to 9 months or so that we've seen housing kind of flatten out, come down a little bit as far as sales go, new sales, existing home sales. That has slowed down a little bit. And I think part of that is a result, and something that we've pointed out in the past, is that wages are not keeping up with the price of housing. Housing prices are rising faster than wages, which means that a lot of people are getting priced out of housing, and it makes it a little bit more difficult to buy. So you are now in a seller, or I should say a buyer's market for real estate. So if you're looking to sell your home, it's going to be a little bit more difficult. You may have to mark it down a little bit. But if you're able to get into that market and buy, you might be able to find some better deals now.
What does that do to the overall economy when that shift happens?
You know, housing tends to be a relatively big part of the economy because when you go into a house, even if you're coming from an existing house into another house, you've got a lot of fix and repair. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to paint this and the furniture doesn't match. You're going to buy some new furniture and do this and do that. So there's a lot of knockoff purchases, if you will, that happen when you buy a house and you move. So it gets a lot of economic activity going when the housing market is healthy. And right now, it's okay, but it's certainly a lot less healthy than it used to be. And lumber prices have something to do with that, too. Lumber prices have been up significantly over the last 3 to 4 months.
Along those lines, Lowe's this week had quite a decent earnings report. People were doing a lot of work on their homes in the second quarter.
Right, and again, that goes back to, do I sell my house or do I fix it up? And so both Home Depot and Lowe's have put up some very good numbers. When you take a look at the performance of the home builders, the Toll Brothers and et cetera, they're struggling at this point. And certainly higher interest rates are not going to help. So the Fed will be raising rates next month. And that will have an impact to a certain extent on mortgage rates as well.
What else did you see from this week from economic data points that we should be aware of?
Yeah, there's one other one that it's a little less known. It's Market, M-A-R-K-I-T, and they come out with their manufacturing number. They do it for economies around the world, and they've done the U.S. this last week, and it showed a little bit weakness in the manufacturing sector. And when you take a look at the economic data that we've been generating, a lot of what we call the soft data, which are the surveys, you know, how are you feeling about the economy, how are you feeling about this or that, those tend to be pretty strong. But when you look at the hard data, so the housing numbers, the manufacturing numbers, those have all kind of come down a little bit. Not significantly, not anything that we need to really worry about at this point because they've been at such high levels before. So as I put it, they've kind of come off the boil a little bit. They're still good. But there's a divergence between those two, and we tend to follow the hard data. That's, in our mind, the real economy as opposed to what people might be thinking.
Paul, hang on. We're going to get more into some of the things that happened this week. Fed minutes are out. They're concerned a little bit about trade. We'll get into that. Talk a little bit more about our portfolio positions.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors lost a little momentum on Thursday, pushing down the Dow Jones 76 points to 25,656 at the close. The broader Standard & Poor's 500 dropped nearly 5 points. The NASDAQ Composite gave up 10.5 to close at 78,78. The markets are keeping a close eye on Jerome Powell today. The Fed chair is giving the keynote speech at the annual gathering of central bankers. Investors are listening for hints about interest rate hikes or the financial turmoil in emerging markets. The Trump administration is making it more difficult for residents in California, New York, and other high-tax states to deduct items from their income tax returns, such as donations. A dozen states, most of them blue states, are considering ways around it. Speaking of California, the Golden State could become the first in the country to prohibit restaurants from giving out plastic straws, considered a threat to the environment. Unless, of course, customers ask for one specifically. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on with Paul Nolte this morning from Kingsview Asset Management. Paul's here with us every Friday to go over economic news from the week and make sure our portfolios are making money for us. Paul, the Fed minutes released earlier this week. One of the lead headlines. It would likely soon be appropriate to take another step in removing policy accommodation.
That's Fed speak for we're raising rates in September.
Yeah.
So that's a given, and I think the market right now is about a 98% chance of that happening. December, maybe 65-70% chance of going. When you look through the minutes and take a look at the various derivatives of strong economy, strong markets, you know, strong wages, etc., there's a lot of them. So they're very convinced that the economy is on very good footing. They're also convinced that inflation is going to kind of stay around the 2% level, and they feel as though wages will continue to pick up. So those give them reason to want to remove additional accommodation and raise rates.
One of the highlights, too, participants observed that if a large-scale and prolonged dispute over trade policies developed, there would likely be adverse effects on business sentiment, investment spending, and employment.
Mm-hmm.
So they're concerned about this trade back and forth.
They are, and they're but they don't have a good handle on, and nobody does right now have a good handle on what the long term impacts will be, because it's going to depend on how the tariffs get implemented. And we just saw the another round get put on this week. So that's going to be a wild card for the Fed and for the U.S. economy. We're not quite sure how that's going to play out. So it's going to be a little bit more of a wait and see. The second part is if the Fed does continue to raise rates, we're seeing a flattening of the yield curve, and we're down to about 20 basis points, or just under a quarter of 1% between the 2-year bonds and the 10-year bonds. Historically, when that changes and the 2-year is yielding more than the 10-year, you now begin the countdown to a recession. And that has been the case in each instance since 1980. So there's some concerns out there right now. At least the markets and the economy continue to be plugging along, and we're not too worried about recession on the immediate horizon.
I think I heard one of the Fed guys this week say he was not going to, at least his vote was not, he would not let his vote cause the yield curve to be inverted.
It's one of the things that they're looking at. You know, again, our view is that the next recession, whenever it occurs, it may or may not occur with the inverted yield curve. So since everybody is now looking at it and very focused on it, that's probably not the place that we're going to see it come from. It'll probably come from somewhere that we're not looking. And it very well may be trade. And that's going to take a while for it to play out.
So what do we do with our portfolios? I heard some caution this week from one of the big brokerage houses about how all of this is going to impact and the political situation in Washington might impact emerging markets.
And it is impacting emerging markets. There's a huge difference just over the last 2 to 3 months between emerging market performance and the S&P. The S&P is up about 4 or 5% since the end of this, since the end of June. And emerging markets are down as much. So there's about eight percentage point spread between emerging markets and the U.S. As the dollar has gotten stronger on the tariff talks, and we've seen Turkey and Argentina and issues with Russia, so we've seen some trouble in the emerging markets. All of that being said, we think over the next 3 to 5 years, as opposed to the next 3 to 5 weeks, emerging markets is a very good value. It's very inexpensive. Growth is much better than a lot of the developed markets. Valuations are a lot cheaper, and financially, a lot of those economies are actually in much better shape from a debt-to-equity perspective than a lot of the developed markets. So we think it's a good opportunity to purchase emerging markets, but realize that we're going to go through these periods where we're going to see some tremendous underperformance, some wild swings, but we think emerging markets are a pretty good place to hang out for the next 3 to 5 years.
How long is the bull market going to continue?
Until it stops. And it won't be because it's old. And that's one of the things everybody keeps talking about. So we think it's going to be the next recession. And our view is that we're probably 18 months, maybe as long as 2 years away from that. So the market can run for a while yet, and certainly the momentum is behind it. As investors move out of emerging markets and international into the U.S., it's got a tailwind, and it can last for a while yet before we see the markets turn down meaningfully. One of the things that we'll keep an eye on is the performance of the markets relative to bonds. And right now, obviously, stocks are doing much better than bonds. And as long as that continues to be the case, the equity markets continue to be a good place to hang out.
And so we should sit tight and watch our money portfolios grow then.
I wouldn't worry too much about Washington yet, just yet, and keep your eyes on Wall Street earnings and the economic numbers. And that's really what's going to drive the markets.
All right, Paul, how can people have this conversation one-on-one with you if they want?
Well, they can drop me an email at pnolte@kingsviewam.com, and that we can get the conversation started.
All right, Paul, thanks for being here today, and see you again next week. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you. Right.
Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management, where he's a senior vice president and senior portfolio management manager. Kingsview.com is their website as well.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's InnoMinute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Codeverse, a Chicago startup that teaches children how to code, has raised a new round of funding to help it open two new learning studios in the Chicago suburbs. The tech company announced it's raised $10 million in venture capital and will open two new studios in Wilmette and Naperville by the end of the year. Salesforce is reportedly looking to build a new riverfront office building in Chicago that could bring up to 5,000 jobs. The company is searching for as much as 500,000 square feet with options to expand, making it three times the size of its current Chicago office. And Google is launching a new program that will award $1 million to Illinois nonprofits that have innovative ideas to drive economic growth throughout the state. The tech company, which employs about 900 people in its Chicago headquarters, announced it will award 10 winners $75,000 grants each for their ideas. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on a Friday edition of The Opening Bell. United Airlines is about to start charging a fee for preferred seating in economy class, and American Airlines is cutting some flights out of O'Hare. Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com and is with us this morning, as he is every Friday via Skype from Los Angeles. Brian, let's start first with American Airlines removing some flights out of O'Hare.
Yeah, some big news out of Chicago this week for American Airlines. You know, years ago, American, like a lot of U.S. airlines, decided that it needed to grow in Asia, China especially, and it was flying from Chicago to Tokyo and also to Shanghai and to Beijing. The American people tell me that those China routes in particular lost a lot of money over the last few years, like a shockingly large amount of money. And with fuel prices going up, American said, look, you know, we can't fly these loss-making routes anymore. So Beijing went first. That was announced a couple of months ago. This week, American said, you know what, we can't do Shanghai anymore. And they're also going to drop Chicago-Tokyo to three times a week from daily. Now, the American people will want me to point out that American is hoping that it can suspend these China routes, and maybe they'll be able to come back in the future, perhaps less than daily or seasonal. But right now, it's not allowed to do that, so it would need to secure special conditions.
So, Brian, how difficult is it going to be for people to get to these locations if they want to go there?
Well, it's funny that you say, right? Because you're in a great location right there in Chicago. There are two hubbed airlines. There's United Airlines. They're still flying those routes. United is a little bit stronger in Chicago. And, of course, now they're not going to have as much competition on these key routes. So you'll always be able to fly there on United. With something like Tokyo, American has a joint venture partner, Japan Airlines, so people can earn and redeem miles on Japan Airlines. That's essentially like flying American. If you're an American loyalist, getting to China will be a little bit tougher. Maybe you'll have to change planes in Dallas-Fort Worth, but you can do it if you really want to fly American.
And begs the question, too, are we headed for more of these kinds of decisions by the airlines now that we're seeing costs go up? Is this going to be something that we'll see in other places as well?
Yeah, I think we are. A lot of airlines are looking at their longest routes because, of course, those burn the most fuel. We saw recently United is canceling its longest route Los Angeles to Singapore after just 1 year, which is hardly enough time, but it's probably just not working. We're seeing these airlines redeploy routes on, or redeploy aircraft on other routes, perhaps a little bit shorter routes. American's actually going to try something interesting next year, just seasonally, but they're going to fly Chicago to Athens. They've had a lot of luck with Chicago Europe flights recently, and they think that's worth giving it a shot.
Let's talk a little bit more about the hometown airline. United was reading one of your stories about how they're going to add some fees for some of these seats in economy class. What are they doing there?
Yeah, I spoke this week with United Airlines President Scott Kirby, and he essentially said that, look, United has been leaving some revenue on the table. People who fly United a lot and they sit in the regular coach cabin knows that you can essentially choose any seat in coach you want for free. So if it's an aisle, you know, row 25, as long as it doesn't have extra leg room, you just choose it. United doesn't ask for extra money. American and Delta generally block those seats. If you're not an elite frequent flyer and you want to sit in an aisle seat in the middle of the plane, you're going to pay a little bit extra. And so United is going to do that as well. There will still be a few rows, well, more than a few rows, several rows in the back of the airplane that you'll be able to choose and not pay a fee. But if you want to sit in the middle of the airplane, yeah, you're going to have to pay a fee.
Is this going to impact families and people that like to travel together?
It could. Right now I travel with my family. It's not hard to get a row across on United. It's certainly easier than on Delta and American. There are going to be fewer rows to choose from, and I definitely could see some families get shut out and maybe not get to sit with each other.
I love how Mr. Kirby tells you they're leaving revenue on the table. Have they identified other areas, too, where there's revenue potentially that they're not picking up?
So that's my phrase, revenue on the table. But I know that we consider Scott to be the revenue architect at United, and especially with fuel prices going up, I'm sure that he's going through all the couch cushions to see what extra money United can pick up. Because I think, Steve, as you and I have talked about before on this program, it's harder than people think to raise fares, even when fuel prices go up. And so airlines are trying to figure out how else they can raise money.
I like that he's probably going through the cushions on the planes as opposed to the couch. I like how you put that. Let's talk about Delta Airlines, because you know, as we have this conversation about seats, another of your stories talks about how there will be fewer middle seats on some business routes.
Yeah, you know, Delta is going to be the first U.S. airline to take delivery of what's now called the Airbus A220. It was actually a Canadian plane until recently, until Airbus took it over, but that's neither here nor there. Early next year, Delta will take delivery of these aircraft. They're supposed to be very comfortable. They're supposed to be very quiet. And not surprisingly, Delta views this as a competitive advantage. So they're going to put it on routes where they're competing with other big airlines. And I spoke to a Delta person earlier this week, and he said, you know, the first routes that they'll go on are probably New York-Texas routes. Those are pretty competitive routes. United flies them, American flies them, and they want their most comfortable aircraft. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they're flying from New York to Chicago, because that's one of those other very competitive routes. And, you know, we talk about most travelers don't care what type of plane they're on. They're always looking for the cheapest fare. But there are some business travelers out there in New York and in Houston and Chicago that actually not only care about comfort, but are willing to pay a little bit more for it. And all the big airlines want to cater to them.
You mentioned some of those airlines in there. JetBlue. Didn't JetBlue get some of these aircraft recently?
JetBlue did order the aircraft, but I think their deliveries are a little bit behind Delta. So we don't know what JetBlue plans to do with them.
I know you and I, Brian, have had the conversation about loyalty programs and frequent flyer programs before. The airlines are making some decent money from these programs, aren't they?
They are. You know, a lot of people view frequent flyer programs as just those programs that they go into, they fly a lot, and airlines give them miles. That's true to a big extent, but people forget sometimes that all those airline-branded credit cards we carry in our wallets are big money makers for the airlines. So if you have your credit card, your United or your American credit card, and you swipe it and, you know, you spend $50 on it, the airline is going to give you 50 miles, right? And eventually you can get a free trip out of that. But the airlines don't just give you the miles. The banks, your credit card companies, actually pay the airlines for the miles. They'll pay as much as 1.5 cents per frequent flyer mile. And that is just, you know, you think about how many miles people generate by swiping their credit cards every day. That is huge business for airlines. I mean, we're talking like $1 billion perhaps in profit at American, according to one Wall Street analyst. So it's crazy stuff.
Yeah, so that's a billion with a B. I can see why that would be a big deal. Are any of the other programs making it? I the better question is, how are each of the airlines doing in this area? Is like one airline making more money on this than another, or are they all pretty much right there together?
Yeah, I don't study this all that closely, but there is a Wall Street analyst who does. His name is Joe DiNardi, and I was looking through his report recently, and he tends to think that American Airlines has the most profitable frequent flyer program, followed pretty closely by United and Delta. It makes sense because those are, of course, the three biggest global airlines. Those are, you know, people love to have these credit cards sometimes because they want to go to Omaha in a few weeks to visit family. And so Southwest is good for that. But a lot of times people want to have the credit cards so that they can go to Asia in business class and things like that. And you can really only do that if you have the American, United, or Delta cards. So it makes sense that those are more profitable enterprises.
All right, Brian, good stuff. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is aviation business editor for Skift.com. Make sure you follow Skift on Twitter and Brian as well at Skift and at Brian Summers, and sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report at skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up about 53 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up about 0.25% each. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you, Steve. Well, we're finally maybe going to get details of the $12 billion aid package to farmers because of money lost because of tariffs and that trade fighting that's going on. Secretary Sonny Perdue said yesterday that details of the planned $12 billion aid package for U.S. farmers will be disclosed on Monday. Perdue, who previously told Reuters the plan would include between $7 and $8 billion in direct cash relief for farmers, said it was being reviewed by the Office of Management and Budget. He made a trip to upstate New York yesterday and said he hoped to have the program, which will provide relief exclusively from tariffs, up and running after Labor Day. The secretary said, "It's not going to make everybody whole. It's not going to make everybody happy." And he made those remarks at a dairy farm in Shodak Landing, New York. And next week, of course, is Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa. Max and I will be there for that. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will be there for that. So he'll be there on Wednesday of next week, and Max and I will have an opportunity to discuss with him the numbers that he's going to talk about when he releases the information on Monday. So, oh, and the NAFTA talks, well, they're continuing over the weekend and will continue next week, according to the Mexican Minister of Trade. And so that's a familiar song we're hearing that, yep, we're working on it. We're going to get it done. I don't know if they ever will, but at least they're working.
And on that, I know they're working directly with Mexico. Canada is still on the sidelines of that. And I guess the question to you, Orin, is can we really have a NAFTA agreement without Canada involved in it?
Well, no, it wouldn't be a NAFTA agreement, but it would be a bilateral agreement. And that's one of the things that President Trump has been saying. You know, we don't have to have these multilateral negotiations and agreements. We can do it individually, country by country. But that's, I'm not sure, going to be any easier. The big challenge that we have with the Canadian officials is the dairy quota package that they have in their country, and that's still a sticking point. Although late in the week, this week, they said that one of the other big sticking points, North American content of automobiles in manufacturing, that they were pretty well getting that one worked out. But we have heard this so long, Steve, where, well, yeah, they're continuing to talk. They're going to get it worked out. And nothing happened, so we'll just have to wait on that.
Another thing I saw this week, Orin, thought of you immediately. Follow on social media, a farmer in central Illinois who was out harvesting corn said that the dry weather had will certainly impact his yields. Is that something that we'll see across Illinois?
Well, not across Illinois, no. There are pockets. Every year we get these little pockets of too much rain or not enough rain. But generally speaking, the crop tour that took place this week, the western leg started in South Dakota, the eastern leg started in Ohio, and then on Thursday they came together in the middle in Minnesota. And the report from that crop tour was pretty positive, talking about some farmers saying best crops they have ever seen on their farms. And again, it's, as it is every year, spotty nature. So I don't think it'll be a general situation where an entire state would have a drought problem right now.
Right. What is on the morning show tomorrow?
Tomorrow morning, we, of course, will talk markets as we do every week. Greg Grubb of Archer Financial Services will be with us to talk markets. And Jim Fazell. We're winding down the garden season for this summer, but Jim will still be here to talk about things you need to be doing in the garden besides harvesting this year's garden crop. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And maybe we'll get to a discussion on closing down the Illinois River because of deteriorating locks and dams that need repair. So those are some of the things we'll get to tomorrow morning from 5 to 6 here on WGN.
All right, Orion, thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, August the 24th. Not a lot on the schedule today. Durable goods orders are due out. The Jackson Hole Annual Economics Symposium continues today. The Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is among those speaking. So those comments could move the markets a little bit later in the day.